Welcome to Paranormal Coffee Hour. We're your hosts, Jen.
And Courtney.
And we're pouring you a strong cup of the weird, the wonderful, and the woohoo. Today's episode of Paranormal Coffee Hour is a continuation of our discussion of the national parks and what on earth is the weird shit that's going on in there.
Welcome to part two.
Whoop! So, part one, we talked about the paranormal activity in different parks.
Yep.
We talked about President Theodore Roosevelt and how he was a believer in the paranormal and actually published an article about a friend's experience with Bigfoot.
Right.
We also talked about the creepiest thing, feral humans.
Yeah.
Not Bigfoot. Sometimes look like a mixture between a Bigfoot and a human, which is kind of interesting to think about.
Maybe they shave.
Are they robbing gas stations for Bix?
Oh, that's funny. We ain't got nothing else in these woods, but we got some Bix.
We got some Bix. So we have all this paranormal activity. What about those of us who are going to visit the national parks? What are people experiencing and what the hell's happening to
even
them?
Even staying on the path.
The people who stay on the path, what's going on with them? So we're going to start discussing right away just how many people go missing in our national parks.
Let's get into it.
So the national park system was established back in 1916. And Courtney, I want you to take a guess. How many people since the opening of the national park system have gone missing in our national parks?
That they've recorded or that they know about?
Well, here's the funny thing. There is no federal level database tracking how many people have gone missing from these federal lands. So it's kind of difficult to pinpoint a number, but we do have an estimate. What do you think that number would be?
2,000.
Actually, it is 2,000 or more, but we don't know for sure.
I mean, technically, how can you keep track of something that doesn't happen?
Or that you don't want to keep track of.
Right. Especially when you're like, well, your relative is just disappeared. Not sure who, what, why, where took it. We'll just say it fell into this geyser and melted.
Uncle Bob just walked into a geyser and melted.
Sorry. Maybe he should have stuck to the trail. But his shoes are on the trail. Yep. Nope. He should have stuck to the trail.
That's their key. He didn't stick to the trail, but he did. No, I don't think he did. Actually, we do have a case recently at a national park, don't we, of a family that went missing and then was discovered.
A family. Okay. There's the parents, a baby, and a dog. Mm-hmm. And they were found dead sitting. They're like, oh, maybe it was carbon monoxide. Nope, it wasn't. There wasn't enough carbon monoxide outside to kill them. They finally came up with they died because they were all dehydrated, even though they had bottles of water sitting next to them. And they were less than, I believe it was 2 miles from their car. But they all just sat down and died.
So it was Ellen Chung, Jonathan Garish, and their one-year-old daughter and dog. They were found dead on August 17th of 2021. In a remote part of the Sierra National Forest. It was a trail near Yosemite National Park.
Surprise!
Mm-hmm. They blame the heat, that these were heat-related deaths, like you said.
Yep.
But that's the thing, is that they considered it probable dehydration. Mm-hmm. But it's really rare for multiple hikers to succumb to heat stroke all at the same time.
Right. And they just all sit down and they just all die.
Well, what? And you also have the dog, too.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that Lassie was trained, for God's sakes. Go get help, dog.
Yeah. So, needless to say, we have people that go missing and are found deceased. There are people who have gone missing and were found alive, but those are more rare.
And people, this was 2021. And of course, we've got the Gabby Petito case also. Mm-hmm. There was 9 to 10 bodies found while they were looking for her.
Right. But we also have people that go missing that are never found. And the question is, why isn't our national park system, why don't they have a database keeping track of this? And that was one of the questions that David Pilatus, who is a former police detective. He's also the author of Missing 411 series. So some of you might be familiar with that series. He has been asking that question for quite some time now.
I mean, why wouldn't somebody ask that question? Why did it take him to ask this question?
So the story is Pilatus, he became a cryptozoologist and started publishing books arguing for the existence of Bigfoot. So he is also a believer of Bigfoot, just so that you are aware of his background. He was researching at a national park and a local ranger expressed his concern to Pilatus about the missing persons cold cases involving the National Park Service. Pilatus then was intrigued, obviously, by this, being a former police detective, and he began to investigate. The thing he learned is it wasn't straightforward because of the fact that the Park Service, the National Park Service, does not keep extensive records on missing persons.
And if they do, they're on cards in boxes. It's not computerized.
Well, and they often leave that job to local law enforcement to track and in most cases, solve. But what Pilatus found is that as he dug in and through these endless reports and cold case files, he noticed some really disturbing trends. In some cases, answers were really easy to come to. Obviously, a person falling to their death, an animal attack, exposure to the elements, or just illness in general. But you also have people seemingly vanishing into thin air, and they were there 1 minute and gone the next. Other stories involved tracking dogs that were brought in that couldn't or wouldn't hunt for the missing person. Other disappearances seem to occur more frequently near areas heavy with boulders, or this I find quite humorous, close to berry patches.
Those berries, that is...
Goddamn that berry.
What in the hell?
So if you go to a national park, don't go pick the berries, okay? You might get taken.
I'm not trying to throw any shade here or anything against the rangers or law enforcement, but are they getting paid by whatever's taking these humans to not investigate?
Honestly, I don't think the rangers are in on this. I think it goes higher than that.
Valid point.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that it was a ranger that kind of blew the whistle on this.
Right. Some of these people who went missing, strangely went missing, were eventually located, but they were located at elevations that were so much higher than when they disappeared. And in some cases, like when you have a toddler that goes missing, this toddler was found 12 miles away from where he vanished.
Okay, toddlers have a lot of energy, but 12 miles?
Well, let's also talk about the terrain that this two-year-old would have had to travel. They would have had to cross two mountain ranges, and I'm just envisioning the baby going up a fence. They would have had to cross over fences and through creeks.
I'm speechless again.
So obviously then the question is, well, maybe they were taken by a human that moved them, you know, abducted them.
And then was like, okay, I'm sending this one back.
And that's the question. But why would they have abandoned this child like 12 miles later?
12 miles later. Oh my God, I'm done with you.
I mean, I'm sure we have parents out there who can relate. But these mysterious circumstances have led to some theories that these abductions are Bigfoot or like a wild man.
Then that question, why does Bigfoot want a baby?
Send the baby.
Right.
Maybe it's their scout.
That's funny.
Send the human. Nobody will be afraid of that. One family recounts a story of watching a little girl walk into the forest only to vanish with no trace. So it's almost like she walked right into a wormhole.
Oh, well, there is that.
Mm-hmm. The question is, could these missing people have come upon portals or openings to other dimensions? So there is a theory on that. Obviously, there's people who are skeptical of David Pilatus. Some of them have worked to try and debunk his claims. They try to saying that, you know, there's statistics that show that all of the cases have perfectly reasonable explanations.
I mean, I get that. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that we do, I question a lot.
Well, we all should question it. I mean, this isn't a podcast to get you to believe everything. It's a podcast to get you to ask questions.
But hot damn, I mean, he was able to categorize a lot of these missing people.
Right. And so when we look at Pilatus and what it takes for him to look at a case and say it has to be something outside of the normal, you know, explainable,
normal, quote unquote,
explainable. These are the things he's looking for. You have intellectual extremes in the victim. So somebody who's incredibly intelligent or somebody who doesn't have that full intelligence yet, whether it's a child or somebody with, you know, a disability of some sort.
So they don't want us normal peeps.
You also have physical extremes. So somebody who is more than capable of surviving and getting through, who doesn't, or like the toddler who would not have been able to go over, you know, this terrain.
I should start being concerned about my kid.
Or yourself. Mid to late afternoon is typically when these things are happening. there's a geographical clustering. So we talked about the boulder fields.
Yep.
We also talk about berry bushes. Those seem to be a big thing too. And the other geographical aspect is a lot of them are taking place in the national parks.
Yes.
The inclement weather. You might have suddenly a weather issue come up for like just a few moments and then disappear like it never happened. Now, I know we can experience shit like that here in Wisconsin.
Yes.
But we're talking about something where like suddenly there was zero fog and now you've got like a heavy, heavy fog and then suddenly somebody goes missing real
quick.
Or
it starts pouring and you lose all tracks whatsoever and then the sun's out and you're like, what?
Exactly. A lot of the disappearances happen near bodies of water, which, you know, people would obviously think that could be a drowning, but no body ever surfaces.
Interesting.
They do search the bodies of water nearby. You have surreal narratives, so things that just don't seem like they could happen. When they do find a body, here's the interesting part. Many times autopsies are done and the coroner cannot find a cause of death. The area in which the person has gone missing is searched and nothing is there, only to have something appear months to years later.
I believe that the story that got David onto this, that Dennis Martin child,
yeah,
he was never found, but then they found bones years later that they kind of like, well, that could be him, maybe.
Yeah. Vanishing tracks. So there's, you know, there's no track or trace of the person on the trail or in the area in which they should have seen tracks from them.
Right.
When they bring in canine units, the canine units get confused. They can't sniff out the path of the person.
Which if you remember when we did Bigfoot and the kid down south of us thought he saw Bigfoot, they brought their dog and the dog's like, nope, ain't looking at all.
Right. Here's another weird thing that they are tending to find with these cases. Shoes. They find shoes, like one shoe. And I know that there was one case of a child that went missing where by a boulder field in one of the national parks, a couple was walking and they found this child's shoe 3 years later. And the shoe looked like it had never been rained on, nothing. It
just
was
a shoe.
It was impeccable condition. It was beautiful. Like it just came out of the box almost.
That's so funny. We'll keep the kid, but here, have a shoe.
Here, take the shoe. Just so you know, we have the other one.
Right.
The other thing is that when the bodies do turn up, if they turn up, they're in areas that are impossible for them to have reached.
That's
on their
what
own.
Fascinates me.
So these are the things that David Pilatus is looking for. And he actually does have a YouTube channel that he keeps current about things going on. So, Court, you mentioned the boy, Dennis Martin, that got Pilatus into the whole missing people thing.
Yes.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
All right. Dennis Martin. In 1969, a six-year-old boy by the name Dennis Martin went missing in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park during a game of hide and seek. He simply hid behind a bush on the edge of the campsite and never came out. A large-scale search with 1,400 people was organized but failed to turn up anything substantial. A suspicious detail to keep in mind is the involvement of 60 Green Berets.
Holy man.
Supposedly, they were on a local training exercise and joined the rescue parties. But one should note that search and rescue efforts are well out of the usual operations for the Green Berets, especially given their reluctance to cooperate with fellow searchers. So what really brought them out there? Not far from where Dennis disappeared, a strange incident occurred the same day as the boy's vanishing. Harold Key, a 45-year-old man, was in another part of the park and reportedly heard an enormous, sickening scream. Not long after, he saw a dark, hairy figure running through the woods with something slung over its shoulder. This was not the first sighting of the creepy wild man of the park. One particular example was in 1973 when a park ranger was attacked by a squatter who attempted to pull a gun on the ranger. That's funny. The squatter has a gun. After a struggle, the squatter fled into the forest and became known as the Wild Man of Cataloochee. Years later, bones of a small child believed to be that of Dennis were found 9 miles from where the figure was sighted by Key. Now that's funny. The kid hides behind a bush and then is found 9 miles away, or that they assume. This was never determined that it was Dennis that I know of.
Okay. Was it a berry bush he hid behind?
Right? Damn those berries.
Damn berries.
Worrying enough, child abductions by strange hairy figures do not seem to be rare occurrences in national parks.
Holy crap.
In 1863, a three-year-old girl was with her father as he tended to a lumberjack camp he owned in Michigan.
Michigan. Oh, Michigan.
Her father noted that she disappeared in a matter of seconds and, overcome with worry, organized a search with two other men. She was found the next day along a river with only minor injuries, a happy ending to a potential tragedy. Yet this is where the case takes a turn for the bizarre. The little girl claimed that she was kidnapped by something she would only refer to as Mr. Wolf, who supposedly kidnapped the younger girl, fed her berries through the night, and released her in the morning.
He fed her berries, huh?
Yeah. And a similar case occurred in 1955, in when a two-year-old, Ida Mae Curtis, disappeared in Kootenai National Forest. Her mother claimed to see her carried off by a bear. Frightening, yes, but becomes all the more eerie when she adds that the bear was cradling her in its arms. She was found 2 days later, a mere 300 yards away in a small shelter of sticks. After the ordeal, the girl went on to claim that the bear fed her till she was found. The last case we shall mention is possibly the creepiest of all and shows that children are not the only victims of these disappearances. Whatever lurks in the forest, it doesn't care how old you are. Eric Lewis was an experienced climber, age 57, and disappeared while climbing Mount Rainier in Washington State. He was accompanied by two other climbers. The three were connected by a cable attached to their belts. From this point on, the incident reads like a classic campfire story. Eric was the third man in line and was in the back of the group. The two climbers in front, Don and Trevor, stopped to rest. Noticing that Eric never joined them, they reeled in the line to find just a knot. Eric was gone. They searched for him and retraced their movements. The ground was covered in snow, so following his footsteps should have been easy. Except he left no footprints besides the ones following his companions. Nowhere did they find signs that he broke off from the group. With bad weather coming in, the two were forced to return to camp and report their friend's disappearance. A search was organized with climbing teams and even a helicopter. His climbing gear was found in an ice cave 200 feet below where he went missing.
Holy shit.
The body of Eric Lewis was never found.
So all his gear was found?
Yeah.
But not his body?
Right, and it was snow.
He would have froze.
Well, that and you would have been able to track his tracks, but there were no tracks.
Oh, jeez. Hey, Courtney.
Hey, Jen.
Do you remember our discussion about the Great Lakes Triangle and Stephen Kubacki?
Oh, yes, I remember Stephen.
You know what one thing we didn't know when we did that episode?
What was that?
He was in a national park.
Oh, no shit. No wonder he went missing.
So to refresh all your memories, go listen back to Great Lakes Triangle. No, I'm kidding. Back in 1979, we had Stephen Kubacki. He went missing for the 15 months after going skiing in a national park. At the scene, if we remember correctly, investigators followed his footprints until they mysteriously stopped. And then 15 months later, he woke up in a field 700 miles away from where he went missing, but only 40 miles away from his father's house.
So he went missing in Michigan.
Yes.
And ended up back, was it Connecticut area?
Connecticut or Massachusetts, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Now that one, I mean, that's more than 12 miles for the toddler, but that one's
700 miles.
And he does not remember a single thing from what I remember when we did Great Lakes Triangle.
He doesn't. But he was wearing clothes that weren't his.
Wow.
He claims that he remembers nothing happened, but he said he didn't suffer from psychological problems. Oh. And remember, he did eventually get a PhD in clinical psychology.
That is correct. Maybe I do remember that part.
He needed to take care of himself.
No kidding.
So here's another fascinating thing. So we have all these people go missing. And of course, we're trying to understand, is it a cryptid? Is it a time portal to another dimension? Or is it just something basic like they hurt themselves and get killed and nobody can find them? Well, there's some interesting stories that I found about people who did go missing briefly and came back.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I have one from an Army veteran. He's talking about his experience on a national park hiking trail.
Oh.
He says, while going for a walk with my two-year-old son on a well-maintained trail, we noticed that the trail markings all around us were disappearing.
What?
When I looked back, I reported the trees and plants were different than I remembered. I heard a snapping sound. My eyes started to fixate on a particular unnerving dark section of the forest. For whatever reason, my entire body started locking up and every single alarm bell in my head was pinging. No matter how hard I tried to focus on this dark patch, I couldn't see shit. I had the weirdest sensation of being able to see each individual branch and plant in higher detail, but I couldn't focus on the scene overall. It was super blurry. I also felt my internal flight or fight mechanism flipping between the two decisions faster than a coin in a coin toss. What's happening is that they're getting a lot of reports of national park trails mysteriously changing.
It almost reminds me of like sleep paralysis. Like you want to move, you have to move, but you can't.
There was another mystery reported by a woman about how the trails within the parks have changed mysteriously, instantly, and without warning. This woman was walking 5 feet off the trail to look at a sign on a tree. And when she turned back, she said the trail was literally not there.
What?
Another person and their son had 3 hours of unaccounted time while they were on a trail. In some cases, this is fairly typical lost person behavior, but it's still quite frightening when people are reporting the fact that these trails are changing before their eyes.
Right.
What the hell is causing this to happen?
Because that's a whole different thing than the wormholes and the time dimensions. Mm-hmm. And
there was also the story of an anonymous 3-year-old boy who went missing in a national park near Mount Shasta in California. He was found 5 hours later in a thicket of trees. He described being taken into a cave by a woman he thought was his grandmother.
What?
Mm-hmm. The boy said he eventually figured out she wasn't his grandmother, even though she was polite to him, and concluded she was a robot because there was some unusual light coming from her head.
What?
When he later recounted the story of his grandmother, she said she would have brushed it off if it weren't for an experience she had while camping a year prior.
Wait, she would have brushed off her 5-year-old story?
3-year-old.
Wow.
3-year-old story. If it hadn't been for an experience she also had. She claims to have been woken up outside her tent with a strange puncture wound.
What?
Mm-hmm. Then there's the story of a man reported being followed by a woman with no distinguishing features. This man came across a trail area that had strange broken branches 8 feet or higher off the ground. He decided to hike it looking for signs of Sasquatch. As he hiked the trail, he was unable to shake the feeling someone was watching him. He turned around. The man saw a woman walking towards him, but he noticed she was somehow moving towards him quicker than her strides should have been taking her. They stared at each other, and he noticed she had no distinguishable features or clothing. He turned back and kept walking, and when he looked back again, she was gone.
So where the hell are they going with this? Aliens? Bigfoot? I'm starting to get a little...
Well, there are theories out there as to what exactly is going on, and I think that's where we head to next.
Fantastic. All right, let's jump into this theories thing. What if events and the traces of entities from the early days of Earth are also stored? Something which is still alive in a sense. The forest as a whole might be a storage medium for many things.
Holy shit. So what we're saying here is that it's potential that the trees are holding on to things and then...
Yes, and I have heard somewhere, not even just once, but a couple different times, that trees hold memories.
Well, we know trees talk to each other.
Yes,
maybe they gossip.
A bunch of bitches. The forest is a place where things disappear and return. And here is the strange thing. Sometimes it's like at a beach where the sea returns something which was swallowed for a long time. Now it's flotsam. We know about incredibly strange missing 411 cases. Search and rescue diligently searching the same area several times and finding nothing. Then sometimes, many years later, lost items or even a person resurfaces. There might be even more to this if we think of the intermingling of dimensions or distorted timelines. We are used to thinking in linear timelines, and we have discussed this at many a coffee hours.
That time isn't really linear?
No. Mm-hmm. Some experiences suggest that we could get into places where timelines are somehow distorted or different. Future and past is not what we think it is. Or let's say it's something we should explore deeper. It is interesting how many people which had a strange experience in the woods reports weird things about the perception of time, too.
I wonder if this could account for those people I talked about who had the trails just suddenly morph on them.
Well, and that sort of makes sense because sometimes it's missing time, sometimes present and past intermingle. Memories can get lost or somebody remembers things and has no idea where that information did come from. Maybe it's some people who are wired to higher dimensions, which have that kind of experience. They can connect to the subspace or alternate stream of reality. That is like mind-blowing.
So essentially the trees are holding on to information that is accessible to some depending on what frequency they're wired at.
Correct.
That's what it's saying.
Right.
Oh, that's fascinating.
The trees don't have just eyes. They have portals also.
And information. That's one theory, that the trees are holding on to different information that's accessible and why some people are experiencing things in national forests and others are not. But I have another theory that's really mind-blowing and a potential for what's going on. Perhaps we have something that is like a paranormal plate tectonics.
Oh.
They're talking about this being a dimensional rift that might be an interesting option to consider. What if you and I were caught in the middle of overlapping dimensions?
I've read many books like this and they are always fascinating.
So a dimensional rift is created when dimensions overlap, or a rift which opens and closes just at certain times.
So we could wake up in 1750 in Wild Wild West and be like, how the hell do we get here?
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if people who just suddenly go disappearing in the national forest, what if they're in an overlapping of dimensions? What if they get into a space that where the dimensions overlap and so they have like a rift that opens up suddenly?
Like, I find this so cool. Yes, I'd be sad for my family, but then also that's so cool.
I just think about the shoe. Is like the shoe the one thing that like gets ejected from that?
Which is funny because nowadays it'd be like, how do I charge my phone? And they're like, what phone? They chuck it through the rift.
But my shoes, you don't need shoes. Wait, we'll just keep this one. We like it. There's also the theory that we could change or train our awareness for shifts in reality. So almost like it's a different atmosphere.
Well, our brains are able to train a lot of things and we create our reality. So,
right. There is the belief in creating your own reality, which also means that if we can shift our perception, is it possible that the experiences that these people are having are catered to their reality?
Okay, so this sort of makes sense. Those little kids, like 2, 3, 5 years old, they're able to still tap into that. But now here's my thing. I'm going walking down this trail.
Mm-hmm.
My brain is then going to
shift reality,
and all of a sudden I'm not on this. I'm just going for a damn walk.
So what they claim is that one idea is that witnesses see in sightings is not what's really going on. It might be something which is too big for the human mind to comprehend and or translate. So basically what they do is they adjust their understanding in this situation.
And that is also known to happen.
Mm-hmm. There's also the theory that the psyche itself is another dimension.
Yes, I do believe that you could tap into that.
Carl Jung, who I work with a lot in terms of his work on shadow work, he has the belief that the existence of a higher dimension is both inside our mind and outside. He refers to it as synchronicity. So when we have synchronicities, what he's saying is that it's the idea about the casuality of connecting the interpersonal life with events outside of you. So like your interpersonal world is connecting with the outer world.
Some people would consider them coincidences.
Right. There's also the theory that we love the most. And that's the theory of a lot of these national parks either have a cave system in them or are right next to a major cave system.
Yes. There are more cave systems than there are parks.
So Courtney, we have a couple maps sitting in front of us here, and I'm hoping that Courtney will be able to share them to our Paranormal Coffee Hour Facebook page so that you can get an idea of what we're looking at. But we have a map of the Sasquatch sightings in the U.S. and Canada reported over the last 92 years.
And I believe this comes from BFRO.
It does.
And they do all the research. They don't usually accept it as a Sasquatch sighting unless they researched and found the information enough to say yes.
Right. So when we look at this map, we notice some trends going on with Bigfoot sightings. One of them is that there's obviously a tremendous amount of Bigfoot sightings that are happening basically east of the Mississippi River. Then we also have another large pocket of Bigfoot sightings that are happening up in the Pacific Northwest.
Surprise, surprise there.
Right. And California. So that's one of the maps that we're seeing. Then we have a map of the people who have gone missing in the United States. Now, some people have argued that this map is just targeting information, but it is also, you know, it's not looking at everybody that's missing, but it's only looking at the areas that wants to look at is what we're saying. But a lot of the hotbed of missing persons also seems to overlay with a lot of where the Bigfoot sightings are. Then we take a look at another map, and this map is showing us where there is higher activities of paranormal activity in the United States.
Do you notice Wisconsin?
Wisconsin has its own square around it.
Fantastic.
The whole damn state is basically what it's telling us.
No wonder you guys are always so busy.
Mm-hmm. So this map actually squared off where the highest areas of paranormal activity are in the U.S. Now, this is a map of the contiguous U.S., which means the connected U.S. I don't see Hawaii and Alaska reported on here.
That's because they have so much activity. They can't.
They're just their own thing. Especially Alaska. Once again, we see an overlap with where paranormal activity is being reported. So Pacific Northwest, parts of the Southwest, Colorado also gets its own, pretty much.
Call me surprised there again.
Wisconsin gets its own box. And then parts of the Southeast and Northeast of the United States. So quite a bit also on the east of the Mississippi River. Now, why are we bringing this all up? So we have a subway looking map of the national park system. Now, this is not all the national parks, obviously.
No.
There's over 300. There might be over 600 national parks in the national park system.
Right.
These are just some of the bigger, more popular parks, it looks like. And
do you notice how Alaska is connected without Canada right there?
I know. Alaska just floats. But Alaska and Hawaii are both represented, as well as the Keys. Though I do not see Puerto Rico in here.
Yeah, I don't see Puerto Rico either.
Mm-hmm. What we notice, though, is that the National Park System map, where the parks are located, a lot of Bigfoot sightings, missing person sightings, those all seem to correlate, and paranormal activity seem to correlate in the same areas as the national parks. So then the big thing that we want to talk about is the cave systems. We have a map showing where the cave systems that have been mapped are located in the United States. It's important to say where they've been mapped, right, Court?
Yes.
Because unfortunately, there's a lot of areas that have not.
No, there is so much cave systems, and they can only get to so many so far.
Mm-hmm. So when I'm looking at this map of the cave systems, once again, one of the major cave systems comes out of Kentucky. That would be the Mammoth Caves. That's also the area where we have the Great Smoky Mountains, not far from it.
Correct.
It's also the area where we have a tremendous amount of Bigfoot sightings.
UFO sightings.
Paranormal activity.
Fantastic stuff.
Missing people. Not fantastic. Then when we look at the other cave areas, they tend to correspond to some of the national parks. So for example, we have Rocky Mountain National Park has a cave system right outside of it.
Yep.
Sequoia National Park has a cave system right outside of it.
And look at Wisconsin's got a few cave systems too.
Yes, we do.
Look at our little square there.
We also have the Grand Canyon.
Yep.
Has its own cave system. That's pretty easy to know. So a lot of these maps where we see Bigfoot activity, we see paranormal activity, where we see UFO activity, we also see a tremendous cave system in that area.
Do you know what I find fascinating? Florida. How does Florida, below sea level, 99% of it, have a cave system?
I know. I don't know.
Fascinating.
So why do we think the caves are important, Courtney?
I think, and through some of the research I have found, that a lot of them are interconnected.
Okay.
One of the theories is there is a particular species of a blind white albino cave fish, the Typholictis, has been found in many widely separated cave systems over several states. It has been found in caves that make a great arc through Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, and are you ready for this? Under the Mississippi River.
What?
Yes, under the Mississippi River, extending into Missouri, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. A vast section of the central and southern United States must lie above one immense cave system. Now, Arkansas? Yes. My uncle, his land actually has cave systems on his land. He's like, don't ever go in there.
Yeah, I've had a client that I did a house cleansing for that lives in Arkansas now that says she has caves not far from her, like obsidian caves. I'm like, oh, crystal caves. Yeah, I'm no sold.
Kidding. No kidding. What happened to you? Well, you see, I was in a good cave and well,
I was looking for crystals in this cave and suddenly I came upon, name it.
Right? And here's another fascinating thing that kind of connects them all. An underground nuclear test called the Schooner Experiment conducted in December 1968, which if people don't know, that's where they figure John Wayne got his cancer from, because almost everybody on the set ended up with cancer when they were filming out in Nevada.
Oh, wow.
Substantiates the theory that caves in North and South America are intimately linked. In this test, a 35 kiloton nuclear bomb was exploded under the desert of Nevada. 5 days after the test, the radiation level rose from 10 to 20 times in Canada, 1,000 miles away from the Nevada test site. The only way the radioactive dust could have traveled that far is through an interconnected system of caves extending all the way from Nevada to Canada. Now, underground. So it wasn't above ground.
Wasn't carried by the wind.
Correct. Mm-hmm. 10 to 20 times it rose.
1,000 miles away.
Right.
In Canada.
That is just mind-blowing.
What's mind-blowing, though, too, is the reason we're bringing up these caves is because what if the caves are a way for activity to hide?
Right. The Mammoth Cave is, what, over 4,000 miles? Or was it
400?
400 miles.
Mm-hmm. Known miles.
That is what they have been able to find and to map. I saw that there was a story, some very well-known spelunkers, they were great at what they do, got lost in it for a week to 2 weeks and then just kept moving and finally found a way out after that long.
Holy shit, I would have lost my mind.
Oh, I know. I can't imagine. Like, you're not batteries, food, water.
Just the claustrophobia alone would have, being underground would have driven me crazy.
Oh, I agree. And then who knows what the hell you're running into?
Exactly. Well, you know that out in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, the Mothman sightings, Point Pleasant isn't terribly far from a connection to the Mammoth Cave system.
Right. And the cave systems are so big and so mighty that there are theories that they're underground cities with some of these cave systems.
Holy shit. Who the hell is living underground?
Some of the theories are they're alien cities. Others, I did hear there's an Egyptian underground city in the Grand Canyon, which an Egyptian city from Grand Canyon, that's pretty fascinating.
So we might have a super highway underneath us for paranormal encrypteds to move.
Yes, how we were taught in school that there's all this hot magma and everything else. No, there's just underground cities.
Well, I mean, we have enough levels to Earth, there could still be magma.
They lied to us.
But there also is enough levels that there could just be a ginormous cave system that we don't know about. And when we look at all these national parks and the fact that one of the commonalities that many, we're not saying all, but many of them have is a cave nearby.
Yes.
That's fascinating to me because I want to tell you a little something. They've been recording. And when I say they, the national parks do keep some records. They keep search and rescue records. Okay. And they also are have the National Law Enforcement Telecommunications System, which helps to keep some of these records too. So there's a number of records on each national park about who they've had to do search and rescues on. So this includes people who've gone missing, people who are in distress, stuff like that.
So this isn't they found them. It's just who they've had to actually look for, whether they found them alive or not.
Right. Let's just be honest. Some of these are legitimate reasons why these people went missing. They're not paranormal.
Right.
So the number one national park for search and rescue is Lake Mead in Nevada. The final number in 2017 for search and rescue was 563 that were recorded.
Now that fascinates me. Like Lake Mead Park or Lake Mead, the lake that they've searched?
Well, Lake Mead is part of, you know, the Hoover Dam.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it is part of a national park. They've created a national park there.
Because they, when they built the Hoover Dam, flooded a city.
Yes. So there's a city under Lake Mead. The next national park is Grand Canyon National Park with 290 search and rescue incidents reported.
I feel like those numbers should be flipped.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Then you have Yosemite National Park in California closely following at 233 search and rescue reports as of 2017. And then Rocky Mountain National Park with 165. And then who takes fifth place but Sequoia and Kings Canyon in California with 138. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park only has had 100 search and rescues reported. Oh, here we go. Yellowstone, our oldest national park, only 53.
Okay. When did these records start coming?
I'm not 100% sure when they started, but this is numbers up until the year 2017. So here's the thing. I decided, I'm like, okay, Lake Mead, Grand Canyon, Yosemite, Rocky Mountain National Park, and Sequoia. What do they all have in common? And I thought, well, we're looking at caves. I wonder if any of these have caves next to them. Just out of curiosity.
Valid question.
I mean, this might have nothing to do with it, but I thought, I'll look. Every single one of them has a large cave system right next to it or in it, including Lake Mead. That one threw me.
Okay, so are we going to go with it's got that many because of the cave system? Are people drowning? How is Lake Mead that damn high compared to these other parks that didn't even, this Lake Mead wasn't even there when other parks were started?
So obviously a lot of the search and rescues could be because of the water, because of drownings or boating accidents. So there's that part. It is a giant lake, and it also does have still a city underneath it that people do want to explore. So it poses some potential risks for people.
I feel like, yeah, when you add water and everything else and the cave systems, you kind of got, I guess, a higher, I don't want to say mortality rate, but
you do. But also, there have been a lot of reported missing people that have not gone into Lake Mead, that have just disappeared on the shoreline. So that's kind of what we're trying to understand, is what is going on here? We have a government that has national parks, you know, that they've expanded. I mean, we didn't even talk about the national park in Ohio that was put.
No.
We'll mention it here briefly, but Cayuga National Park in Ohio, they basically took over a city.
Yes.
And made everybody move out
in the 80s
to create that national park.
But then they didn't make it a park until the 2000s.
Right. What took them so stinking long to make that a national park? They make everybody move. But then it doesn't ever become a park until like 20 years later. So there's that mystery. So what is it that the government knows? Here we go, a little conspiracy sounding. What does the government know? What are they trying to protect us from? Because there's parts of national parks we can't go to.
Right. Or shouldn't.
Or shouldn't. Like El Yunque in Puerto Rico that just closed the whole damn park down for a while. What is it that's there? What have they found? Why are people going missing so strangely?
Right. Do we want to know?
Do we really want to know? So there's lots of questions that we end this coffee hour with, because there isn't a clear answer.
No. A lot of speculation, a lot of theories.
And when we started this, we were like, wow, this sounds like a conspiracy theory.
I know. It sort of brought us back to our giants, where the Smithsonian's hiding things, even though they have the card saying they have it.
Right. So it really is one of these coffee hours where we end with more questions than answers. I think we end every coffee hour with more questions than answers, to be
honest. A lot more times than we should.
No, I think that's what coffee hour is about, is just ending with questions.
We want to blow your mind.
But it's up to you. It's up to you to decide. What do you believe? Do you believe it's just people going missing for natural causes? Because there are those that do. But then remember, there are those that are suddenly gone missing at the poof. You know, like
the dad turns to the side, turns back to kids gone.
Right. No tracks, no nothing.
2,000 people are looking for the child. No child.
Right. So I think this is a good time. Set down your cup of coffee and think about, what is it that's going on in these national parks? What does our government know? What don't they want us to know? And what do you believe?
Let us know in the comments.
And we'll try and do our best to post some pictures of those maps that we were talking about. So as always, we ask you, keep it weird, keep it wonderful, and keep it woohoo.